Hello and welcome to Talking Theater. I'm Alex Dunneman, and today I'm joined by Alexander Dawkins and Jake Kutchick, who recently premiered their Buffon piece, Pride and Prejudice, at the Edmonton Clown Festival. That's what I'm calling it, at least.
Well, that's good. Right.
Yeah, yes! So let's turn it over to you guys first. I just want to know a little bit about your backgrounds as artists.
Cool. I'm Alex. Andra.
My first production ever was as a 9-year-old child. I played Mowgli in The Jungle Book at Utel Grandin Catholic Elementary School.
Very nice.
Fell in love with the attention and continued from then on to go to summer camps with Marilyn Ryan for the following 3 years. And then I was in high school production. I skipped junior high. That doesn't matter because I was only in one. And then I did high school productions, and I was going to be a veterinarian. Just supposed to say vegetarian. And then I was like an actor.
All right. Well, that's a difference.
Yeah.
That's great.
Veterinarian turned actor.
Yeah.
For me, I grew up on a farm about an hour and 15 minutes east of Edmonton, Holden, Alberta.
Cool.
In a school, grade 7 to 12, with like 180 kids, so tiny, and there was no music or drama programs there. So I went to Theatre Alberta's Camp Artstrek for a number of years, and then started a theatre company when I was 16 in Holden, called the Beaver Hill Players, and they do a ton of farces for the community in their little 385-seat theatre. And then went to Red Deer College, got a diploma in theater performance and creation, did Canada's National Voice Intensive with David Smuckler and the gang, and also and now in the BFA acting at the university.
Me too.
Yeah, with Alex, yeah.
Yes, both in your final year of the BFA.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, so for everyone who doesn't know I was one of these people that came out here, and I had never heard of Buffon in my life, and I was wondering if you guys could give a little... little description of what it is for you, maybe a bit of the history of it.
Yeah, for sure. I first found out about Buffon when Nathaniel Justiniano came with Naked Empire to the Fringe, and they toured a show called You Killed Hamlet, which was mind-blowing. It talked a lot about social issues of different kinds, and also the idea that, you know, we can do Hamlet so many times, but there's more to theater than just Shakespeare. What is this? So I first found out about it there, and then came here and studied with Mike. And then I've been doing lots of readings lately because of our show, and there's lots of different opinions on how it came to be and what it is. So the way that Alex and I both heard about it is that there was a day where all of the swamp people and lepers and peasants were allowed to come into the court and be the, like, rulers for the day, or the you know, aristocracy. And this happened back in medieval times in France. Based on readings, there's also opinions that there was on or about January 1st, the lower class citizens were allowed to become, like, the priests of the church.
Right.
Or the aristocracy in the church for a day, which was known as the Feast of Fools or the Feast of the Ass, and people were allowed. That's when these peasants and these lower class people would parody the church and parody the liturgical nature of what was happening. And then it branched off. People thought about the parodies and the social comments that were being made because of the style of performance and took it in a vein like Gaulier teaches Buffon as a way to point out social issues and to parody things like much like they did about the church. It's kind of a brief history of it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, because I've heard of those before. Like, I mean, a lot of people have heard of Le Fête des Fous from Victor Hugo.
Yeah, exactly.
Notre Dame, right? Like, that's very much where, like, that was talked about often. And a very different kind of, like, they had a very focused, like, centered in solely on the church kind of focus.
Yeah.
Buffon clearly has gone in a lot of different ways. So you guys, you both then trained with Michael, and that's kind of where he got the introduction. Awesome. So, okay, after hearing all that, what was it that drew you guys to Buffon Theater enough to go off and do a show on your own?
For me, I was introduced to Buffon through Mike Kennard in our training last year. And the most interesting part of it as a performance artist for myself became, and the conceptual idea of how a bouffant operates and what its purpose is on mm-hmm. stage. That being I guess the best way to put it and the way that Mike put it for us was in clown. The clown is the fool, the idiot, and mm-hmm. the audience laughs at the clown in relation to their own lives because they see themselves in the clown's idiocy and mistakes. In terms of the bouffant, the audience is the fool rather than the clown, and so the audience mm-hmm. ends up laughing at themselves through the performance of bouffant, and there's kind of a weird mythical sort of take on that, that the king of the court would watch this performance and laugh during it because it's funny, mm-hmm. and then later would go home and want to kill himself in realizing retrospectively what he or they were laughing at. And so for me, what draws me to Buffon is the intelligence of the creatures and the, as a performer, knowing that you are the most intelligent one in the room, and so coming on stage, mm-hmm. you're there to deliver a message and to parody and to mock, but in a very charming and sweet way. So that form of performance for me is like my favorite thing to do. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I know definitely when I was watching, I'd have moments where you have audience interaction, and the minute I interacted, I went, oh, damn it, here we go. It's like you do it because you're like, oh, yeah, I should be helpful to. No, this was a bad idea. This was a really bad idea. Interesting. So what about you, Jake? What kind of pulled you in?
When I watched it, just the notion of involving the audience, and not necessarily involving them, you know, performatively, not needing them to come up on stage, but the idea that they do exist. The audience mm-hmm. is there. We're there for the audience. And I think a lot of the times we lose that. I think a lot of, you know, well-made plays, which I've been talking about for the past year because of Jordan Tannehill's book, Theater of the Unimpressed, those well-made plays often ignore the fact that the audience exists, which is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's just for me, the audience is there. Might as well use them. Mm-hmm. And in this style, I find that it's effective. I find that, you know, recognizing the audience and playing to them with them, you know, in a conversation is a way to both keep it lively for me, but also provide a source of entertainment that the audience is also involved in, as opposed to just watching.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Well, I think there's an unsure, uncomfortable excitement given to the audience when they are empowered to be a part of the performance, because it's kind of like what you just said, Alex, where you you know, you want to be willing to offer an answer that maybe a bouffant's asked a question. Mm-hmm. And their sort of ability to entrap by means of relaying information and asking questions of the audience and getting the audience to respond and then kind of snapping back to them and turning the conversation around unexpectedly, I think it's an interesting and fun format of theater that is relatively uncommon, at least in Canada, that as far as I know.
I certainly had never heard of it before, at least out east. If it does happen, no one's talking about it.
Yeah.
That's the way I'll put it. I mean, I think there's some clown, but not definitely not bouffant.
Yeah, I think the farthest east that I know of would probably be, you know, Adam Lazarus, and that's you know, Toronto or Montreal at the NTS. Mm, but other than that, out east, I don't really know much about bouffant practitioners.
Yeah, well, this is sort of jumping around a little bit. I have a very nice agenda laid out here that we're going to totally throw away, only because we brought up some interesting stuff about audience. And that's something, I wonder too, you're talking about that interaction with them. And with this kind of show, actually, maybe we'll wait on a second for that, but because it's so reliant on audience participation, how did that kind of affect your rehearsing? Because I know when I was watching your show, there's a huge amount of audience participation, and not having them in the rehearsal hall, did that change anything? Did you have reactions you didn't expect?
Yeah, in terms of actually hunkering down and writing the script together, there was kind of always this omniscient awareness of, okay, this is going to be in front of other human beings, and so in terms of what the difference between what the actual text on the written script was and the audio from the show that we recorded is kind of funny, because you have to write a structure for yourself that you can always return to. You have to have a skeleton that is strong and that flows through, so that when you have those unexpected breaks for instance, an audience member blurts something out and you improvise for, you know, a minute and a half
right.
on the comment that they made, you have to have something to go back to so that it doesn't kind of fall off the rails. And so in terms of writing the show, we allowed the script to flow from idea to idea with room inside for improvisation. For instance, there was a section of the script where we just kind of put in the stage directions like, okay, now audience member, like, comes up, quote marks, like, you don't right. really know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was interesting to play with.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the idea of Buffon being reliant on participation. A lot of the time, you know, there's shows that bring up audience members on stage, like we did. Mm-hmm. But also the other show that was in the festival with us, Exposing the Mold is what it was mm-hmm. called, with Philip Geller and Emily Howard. Mm-hmm. Their show didn't bring up an audience member. Mm-hmm. They relied solely on their own script, which was fantastic, and also using the comments that the audience made. Whereas we...
Plus we were given bread to check it out.
Exactly, and that was their style of involving the audience. So yeah. for us, it was a lot of fun both having them up there with us on the stage mm-hmm. and also using them while they were seated. And rehearsing for it, too. It's all about, for me, the strongest note that I was getting is all about silence mm-hmm. and being okay mm-hmm. with the silence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something I strive to do is be totally 100% okay with the silence, because the silence for me builds tension. Mm-hmm. It builds that unexpectedness of what's going to happen yeah. next. And then yeah. I find the audience sits there going, am I supposed to be doing something? Or mm-hmm. what are they doing? Am I supposed to do something for them? Yeah. I don't know. And mm-hmm. so in the rehearsal process, it was a lot of really just taking the time and allowing silence to be okay.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think Robert Wilson was the one who said it takes 30 seconds for an image to land, too. Mm-hmm. So just in terms of that, like, so rarely are, like, pauses and genuine just, like, restraint of sound, like, so rarely is that found on stage mm-hmm. Because it has to be earned. And so, like... Mm-hmm. Allowing yourself to just you feel it out when you're on stage. Mm-hmm. You feel out when the moment in the silence comes when you're like, okay, this is a long time. It's been a long time, and then you mm-hmm. go past that, and then you go past that, because it allows the audience to sit with, pardon my French, but the shit that's kind of been going on stage. They have to sit with the shit and kind of that uncomfortability that you hold them in mm-hmm. can then turn into a rebound where you bring in the next idea, and it's a give and take consistently throughout the show and the performance of, like, comfortability and who's laughing at what kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Annie Baker does a lot of that. Mm. With The Flick, for instance, it's an example of a play where some people walk out because there's so much silence. Yeah. And it's like, whoa. But it's interesting because I think, too, with Buffon, I mean, you guys look grotesque when you're on stage. And so I think even in the silence, there's a lot to look at.
Yeah.
So I think yeah. that's... Because, you know, sometimes silence on stage can be too much, because it's a question of, is your silence there for a reason?
Yes.
Or is your
yes.
silence there because I don't get to see silence often? Yeah. But at least, like, what I found, at least in your show and in Buffon, it seems like those silences are almost easier mm-hmm. to earn because of how grotesque and how much there is to notice.
Yeah.
Well, the focus is a reflection of the audience at themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the silence gives us a chance to look at them and be with them, but it also gives them a chance to look at us and be with us and to actually have to be there with us and not laughing or giggling at what's happening. They have mm-hmm. to be in that relationship with the performer, with us, right? So so it's kind of a fun aspect of it as well.
That's of course. Just the weight in the room of all the minds going. Like when you point fix and you decide to just kind of drag out that silence looking at someone, just the build of that human to human interaction, but it's mm-hmm. it's not quite, because you're not really human on stage in Buffon. Mm-hmm. You're this weird, grotesque, lumpy, horrible looking thing that in itself is the reflection of the the garbage parts of the human and mm-hmm. the things we don't talk about and we don't express. So,
Were there any, in your show, was there any reaction from the audience you weren't quite anticipating, or any moment that sort of stood out for you guys? Or was there a long list?
Right off the bat, the first show we did, mm-hmm. Even just coming on stage and giving our introduction and our entrance, I just asked the audience how they were doing, and right away somebody responded, and I just jumped on it, and we spent about, I would say, almost two minutes, maybe that's a long time, but just bouncing off different audience members and completely changing the intro of the show because we were like, ah, right, yes, people and their thoughts. And so it just gave us a chance to really dig in and have them there with us right away, which was cool.
Yeah.
So unexpected, but really, really fun.
It's great.
Well, I think giving the silence, giving them time to respond, gave us and them a lot of opportunity to come up with something that nobody could have anticipated. And I mean, audience members decide to leave, right? In the first show we did, you know, these two folks in wheelchairs and their companions, you know, left in the middle of the show, and that's something that, you know, we maybe thought could happen, that people might leave because of the material, but when it actually happens, it's a totally different situation, and so having to deal with that becomes a challenge for me to deal with, or for Alex to deal with when that happens, or when somebody yells out, you know, when we're talking about the acronym LGBTQ and someone says transvestite. How do you?
It's like, all right, this is gonna take a new turn.
Yeah, exactly. So let's take a second to unpack this. Yeah. That's not what that stands for. Here we go. Right. Teaching moment, a trap, right? It's a playing with the unexpected and the everything. It's 100% listening all the time and playing with any detail.
Exactly. You just got to be on your toes the entire time.
That's a great segue, because I realized we haven't even told them what the show was about. So the show... Oh, there, my laugh brought us into the red. Okay, so the show was dealing with a really intense theme, dealing with the LGBTQ plus community and social issues. So I was kind of wondering, what drew you guys to that topic? I mean, you made this play from scratch, right? So.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think about what's timely, because we can pick, you know, World War II, Holocaust, and write a show about that. And it is effective. People do it. I mean, we watch all these, you know, shows, these theatrical shows that delve into that, and it's meaningful, and it's emotional, and it's impactful. With us, we wanted to go with something a bit more recent. And so we saw the ad for submissions for the Clown Festival, and just before that, I think, before we had actually started writing our proposal, the Orlando shooting happened.
Right.
And just prior to that, it was Edmonton Pride, and I had, you know, posted a thing on Facebook saying, I'm so thankful that there were people who fought this fight so I don't have to, you know, thank you to those people. And then Orlando happened, and it kind of kicked me in the gut, and I went, I do have to do things. The fight's never over. I was one of those people who felt, you know, that things like this just don't happen anymore.
Right.
And so Alex and I talked about that in response to Orlando, in response to LGBTQ issues, because it is timely. And the ignorance and the generalization that happens toward that community, and wanted to kind of send that issue up. Because we're in Edmonton, and, you know, if we were in the far south, you know, we might have more to draw from. Pastor Steven Anderson with the church in Arizona, who's absolutely, you know, conservative, you know, shoot the homosexuals. So we don't have that here as much. I mean, I'm not going to say it all because, again, but we don't have as many loud, super conservative people shouting off these hateful things.
Right.
So we had a different fight to fight in Edmonton.
Well, and we were worried in terms of like, we're in Edmonton. We're in the, you know, the fine arts building at the university. Who's going to show up to this show? Probably fine arts students. Are we preaching to the choir? And so part of the discussion was like, for me, at least something important that I really wanted to hammer into the show was that there's a difference between considering yourself an ally of the LGBTQ plus community and realizing that we all belong to it. It's not a system of othering or of difference. It is in itself like a subculture that by no means do I mean to dilute by saying that, you know, let's say for hypothetical purposes, if I identify as straight, it doesn't disclude me from being a member of like the community of differences in sexuality and gender. So something that we really kept in mind in the writing of the script was that we wanted to make sure it was really hammering home that we're all a part of this, and how do we, by going to an extreme in the show, take it back for an audience member or members to see the intricacies of detail within the extremity so that they can realize where they fall in the spectrum of contribution to the extreme. Like, why did this have to happen? Yes, things like this still happen today, and just because we're in Edmonton and, you know, personally anyway, surrounded by artists all the time, it doesn't mean everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is quite timely. Just a couple days ago in Halifax, queer people of color were basically shouted out of the Halifax Pride planning meeting because actually it's funny when you mention this, and this is part of the thing where I think it's still an issue even harder, is that it's interesting because there, anyway, it's a whole other complex issue, but down there at the moment, for those planning committees, obviously anyone's allowed to come and help with those. But the problem is that anyone's allowed to come, which can be difficult because there's a smaller community. You know, sometimes LGBTQ plus community is, I mean, obviously it's smaller. Simply because that's just the nature at times of sexuality and of people who are willing and open about it. And so can be, their voices can be drowned out. So So it's still, it's still definitely happening. It's still happening in Canada. So,
well, and I mean, there's all this talk going on with, you know, the school boards, the Catholic school boards in Alberta, of these schools that are, you know, publicly funded, who don't want to follow these new human rights, you know, saying that students are allowed to identify in a form that's not necessarily binary. You know, like they don't have to be just male or female. And that's a new law that's coming to fruition that these schools don't want to follow. And so that's a conversation too, right? And and it's always timely. It's just a matter of location denotes what's necessarily effective versus just preaching to the choir.
Exactly. So what about Buffon kind of feels like or draws you guys to talk about those kind of sensitive subjects? I don't know if that was a well-worded question, but...
I think the medium of Buffon's performance allows for you to get freaky because you've separated yourself kind of one step away from, you know, just going on stage as Alex and being like, hi, blah, 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 screw this, and this is dumb, and, you know, throwing out slurs. As soon as you're in that garb of, like, the body of the Buffon, and you are that grotesque thing that people are sort of trying to figure out the whole time, it sort of gives you an engine to talk about stuff that you just don't say. Like, we talked a lot about, we actually, when we started writing the show, we talked a lot about Neo Buffon, Sacha Baron Cohen, and that vein of all that Borat and Ali G and all that stuff. Because we'd initially written the script as kind of two news reporters, and we just we were like, why isn't this working? Why does it feel not like it's not landing? And it was actually Mike that ended up suggesting, well, why don't you just do it in Swamp? Because that gives you the ability to jump between different parodies and jump between different ideas because you are this singular entity that's morphing rather than having to, you know, justify these horrible things as just two caricatures on stage. So
And the style of Neo Buffon, which is Sacha Baron Cohen, you know, Borat or The Dictator or Bruno,
Ali G,
all of these style, that subsection of the Buffon style is effective in different ways. And the way we tried to play in that realm, we tried to, you know, create that style of Neo Buffon, it didn't work. So with tackling this material, and any sensitive material, it's the sweetness. The Buffon has to be sweet. The Buffon has to, you know, have the kindness, but also the absolute, like, just grotesqueness of it, too. So the terrible comments that the Buffon say are disguised under a sweet guise that makes it more uncomfortable, that makes it more effective. And it lands more because it's just a little bit more off-putting than, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of these sort of themes, and even for people in the LGBTQ community or any other kind of minority groups, sometimes are faced now with the sweet hatred, right?
Yeah.
No, I love those people. Yeah. It's not around me. Like that kind of, like, feeling where they're like, oh, no, they're great. Like that kind of sense, which, you know, can mean politeness as well. But anyway, so it's fun watching that because it is like a very different take on that, yeah.
Well, it's jarring when we say, you know, let's go bomb the queers in a sweet undertone as an acronym for LGBTQ, it creates a different sort of tension. It creates a more elastic tension where the audience goes, did I just hear that right?
Yeah.
I did just hear that right, but they said it in a way that sounded like it should be something that is nice, but it wasn't, and then it's confusion layered with tension, but complete and total understanding of what's actually being said.
Well, and in terms of, like, unexpected reactions, the second night we did the show, we asked the audience to join. For those that didn't see the show, the two Buffon, Lizzie and Darcy, the two characters, come up with this five-word phrase to help the audience remember the LGBTQ+ acronym, and the phrase is, let's go bomb the queers. And in the script, we invite the audience to join in and chant this with us so that they don't forget it. And in the script, we allowed ourselves, like you were talking about, how did you write the script in terms of, like, audience participation? We wrote, like, they're probably not going to want to say this out loud. So we scripted, like, oh, what's wrong? Like, what's... why aren't you joining in with us? But the second night we did it, we were halfway through the first time saying it, and everyone was just screaming it, and we were like, okay, so we're going to deal with this differently today, which ended up being more fun. But
do you think that's too, and this is a question you and I had, like, it was in a clown festival, and, you know, you're in a town where clown is trained, and so there's a lot of students. So I'm wondering, do you think you require an informed audience for these types of shows? Mm-hmm. And do you think this would have been different? Because, you know, in that room, at least when I was there, there was a lot of people who knew what to expect, right? They had an idea. So do you think there'd be a difference?
Do you mean, like, in terms of informed, like, informed on clown rules?
About Buffon,
Gotcha.
Not necessarily informed about the subjects.
Gotcha.
I mean, just more about what it is they're about to see.
I think that either way is fine, because we had a few audience members like Mike and like Christine Nutting, like people that have done and taught and performed in this art form that know the rules. And I think sometimes, you know, if you're watching students of an art form, you can see the rules very clearly and it can be distracting. But our feedback was that it didn't get in the way. And then I had people like my parents come that have... Never seen something like that, and they were just, like, fascinated by it. I think if you walk in, I think if it's done well, if it's done intelligently enough, anyone can walk in, whether they're, like, a master Buffon or, like, my mom, and be like, oh, okay, I'm in this. I don't know maybe what's going on right now, but I gotta pay attention to this thing. So,
yeah. Interesting.
That's my take on that.
And I think the grotesqueness of the way that we dressed kind of gives that feeling the moment we come on stage. There's something otherworldly or, like, inhuman about it, yet we still are people in a room with people. And so I don't know. That's a very good question, Alex, because I don't know a ton of people who were at the festival who knew about it or didn't know about it. I didn't ask, right? So, and there was lots of response after the fact. Like, I talked to a few people who hadn't seen Buffon before, but totally were with us 100% of the way. And, you know, were impacted by our show and the meaning of it. You know, one person said that they didn't come out until Orlando happened.
Right.
And that's when they decided that they needed to come out. Somebody else said that they grew up, you know, in central Alberta and were egged on to call Ralph Klein to tell him that gay marriage is wrong and that, you know, he's doing the right thing by proposing that gay people shouldn't be allowed to get married. So both of these people came to our show not knowing what Buffon was, but were still impacted by it. And so I think... I think no. I think the audience doesn't have to be informed, but I think it has to be sold from the minute the performers walk on stage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I think you guys definitely did that with the costume. I know I was very new to it because I had only seen a Buffon piece the night before, which was Emily's and Phillips, and I was like, oh, this is what it is. Yeah. Okay. So when you guys came out immediately, I was like, all right, here we go. Yeah. Here we go. And it's good. I think that did work quite well. I think it would be more off-putting if you weren't dressed in that way and not in a and not in a good way, right? Like it's like I was definitely put off, but in like a way that I was like ready to kind of listen at this point.
A playful way.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's also the I don't know if it's true, but it's the image of like, oh, the pity that's kind of given to these lepers or to these, you know, people who like look less fortunate.
I'll forgive what they're saying.
Yeah, exactly. It's, oh, wow, poor guy. I better hear what he has to say. Yeah. And then you hear it and you're like, holy cow. But it's undertone with sweetness again, right? Yeah. So it's the really making sure the audience is with you from that, and that's what it is too. It's you have to make sure the audience is with you from the minute you begin performing.
Well, and one of the comments an audience member gave us was that the show became a constant negotiation of, are they making fun of this or are they parodying it? Wait, what are they? Okay, is this a joke? Okay, are they serious? So it's just like a game of like tennis where you're like, it's in my court. Wait, oh God, give it back. I don't know what to do. I'll laugh maybe. Like it's just
keeps on your toes.
It's consistently unsettling and then funny. And then our goal is like to get you laughing because you're uncomfortable, not because we said, you know, the word. I won't say one.
Yes. No. Absolutely. Absolutely. Great. Well, thank you very much, guys, for coming in and chatting.
Cool, absolutely.
This is great. Will we get to see you guys do more Buffon in the future, you think?
I think so.
I love that you shared a great look there.
Well, we're in, like, I mean, we always, you know, look into performance opportunities, and I think it's a style that excites us both.
Yeah,
definitely excites me and definitely makes me feel like it's an easier way to share an opinion without, you know, pretending that something's not happening in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm. But we can definitely see you guys next in Twelfth Night at the Studio Theater.
Yes.
So that's going to be really fun. A very different style.
Yeah. A little bit more classical.
You guys are great at it all. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much. Tune in next week for a very special episode. I'll be talking with Daryl Cloran of the Citadel Theater. So stay tuned for that. Mm.